This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
Yes, it's Worldwide Wave Time, Joy's international news and current affairs show, especially for the LGBTI community. We enjoy taking you around the world one country at a time. Big thanks for the hits to JJ and Richard for bringing us the latest in local news. On the Worldwide Wave panel tonight, Ian is here.
Nice to be back.
Hello, Stefan.
Good evening.
And I am Matt.
Now, the early days of White Australia were built on England exporting their troublemakers to Australia. Been happening recently with me as well, I think. Well, tonight we hear how Australia got one back on the palms, an Australian who turned Englishman, who's been stirring things up in the name of human rights for over 50 years. We speak with human rights and LGBT icon Peter Tatchell.
Peter shares the highs and lows of his fight to get a safe school-style program into UK schools.
In an extensive interview, we also find out why he's leading the charge to bring marriage equality to Northern Ireland.
And we discover how this former Pentecostal Christian became the LGBTI campaigner that we know today.
Plus, in Worldwide Rap, we look at Israel and where off the back of Eurovision, there is a push to stop the display of pride flags. Japan is leveraging Taiwan's marriage equality success with a bill of their own, and find out what the British royals said about pride celebrations.
Of course, we would love you to be a part of our show. You can send us an SMS on 0427 Joy949 or email us on air at joy.org.au. And of course, we are live on Facebook for your questions or comments.
Our diverse communities have one home, Joy.
Now, for decades, the name Peter Tatchell has been synonymous with human rights. He drove campaigns in support of Aboriginal rights as a school child and campaigned against the death penalty. He was a leading member of the UK's Liberation Front, organising sit-ins in pubs that refused to serve the puffs. He was a founder of Direct Action Group Outrage. We'll hear more about Direct Action later. And he played a part in campaigns from Russia and Zimbabwe to South Africa and Iran. Wherever there's injustice, chances are Peter Tatchell will be there.
We need a trumpet there.
We do, yeah. He's been a bit of a hero to me, and I was a bit in awestruck to chat to him just a few days ago. He has created the Peter Tatchell Foundation to take human rights to a wider audience. And we started out by asking Peter about the foundation.
The foundation is a registered charity in the UK. Its aim is to defend and promote human rights across the board. But one of our big focuses is, of course, to support the struggle in Northern Ireland for marriage equality. Right. It's the only part of the UK where still same-sex couples cannot marry the person they love. We're also leading the fight for mandatory LGBTI-inclusive relationship and sex education in all schools. We've got the government committed to that, together with many other organisations who've been championing the same cause. But we are pushing the agenda much more strongly and much further than the government and other organisations are going. So we're saying it's quite right that relationship with sex education should warn young people about the risks and dangers of sex, like sexual infections, sexual abuse and so on. But it should also inform young people about the benefits and pleasures of sex. So that it isn't just all negative and scaremongering.
So it should be sex positive?
Sex positive, yeah. At the moment, relationship with sex education is not mandatory. It's not compulsory. Some schools do it. In fact, most schools do it. But the quality is very variable. Some schools do it quite well. Others very poorly. Some may only have like one lesson a year, 30 minutes or an hour. And we're saying that's not good enough. We want to make sure that every school, including faith and independent schools, have a legal obligation to provide potentially life-saving and health-affirming information to all young people. At the moment, the government is committed to making it mandatory. It was supposed to be introduced in September this year, but it's been postponed to September next year, 2020.
Because
and the government is equivocating over the degree to which faith schools and independent schools will be obliged to adopt it. We're saying young people's health and welfare comes first, and that political, religious, or cultural sensitivities cannot be a bar on young people receiving the information they need to lead happy, healthy, emotional, and sexual lives. And we're also saying other things, apart from the sex affirmative and sex positive approach. We're saying that it's very important that if the government is serious about tackling child sex abuse, that one of the ways to do this is to give young people a positive attitude towards sex, a confidence of talking about sex, and to try and diminish sexual guilt and shame. Because sexual guilt and shame is what abusers rely on to keep their victims silent. So young people who feel guilty and ashamed about sex probably won't come forward to disclose abuse.
Yeah.
Whereas those who are not ashamed about sex will be more likely to do so. And this is a big controversial area, which even a lot of other organisations working in this field are rather reluctant to take on board. Which, to me, strikes me as very, very strange. And
well, you've never been shy to take on big issues. So why are they reluctant to take on an issue like this?
I think that the whole idea of being sex positive and sex affirmative, they fear will play into the hands of right-wing pundits, newspapers, politicians, and they're afraid of the blowback.
And what does that backlash look like in the UK? I sort of know what it's like in Australia, but what does it look like in the UK these days?
Well, the typical response is you're promoting homosexuality, bisexuality and transgenderism. You're trying to encourage young people to have sex at an early age. You're going to increase the level of sexual abuse and assault and so on. All nonsense arguments.
Of course.
And, of course, our default recourse is to always say the 15 principles we've set out are based upon what young people themselves have told us. So I've been speaking in schools for 40 years and I ask young people themselves, what do you want? What is your perception about the level of relationship and sex education that you get? And the feedback is what I have incorporated together with other sex educators, the feedback that they've got from young people. So we're really trying to give a voice, to amplify the voice of young people.
Absolutely. Have you seen any of the experience from Australia, what's happened with the Safe Schools programme?
Absolutely, absolutely.
What's your reaction to that?
Well, of course, it's gross misrepresentation of what the programme is about. And we're seeing the same kind of thing right now in Britain, where the No Outsiders program, which is similar to Safe Schools, is being targeted mostly at the stage by Muslim parents and Muslim organizations, but some Christian extremists as well. And so in some schools, for example, in Birmingham, in the Midlands of England, we're finding that parents are protesting outside school gates, together with Islamist extremists of various hues, who are falsely claiming that these lessons teach primary kids about sex, that they are promoting homosexuality, and that they are trying to sexualize young people. That is completely untrue. These lessons for primary kids are not about sex. They're about love and relationships and about different families.
So we're talking to human rights campaigner Peter Tatchell, founder of the Peter Tatchell Foundation in the UK. Coming up, we find out about his passion for marriage equality in Northern Ireland. You're listening to World Wide Wave.
Boa noite. This is David from Brazil, listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
You're on World Wide Wave, and that was Will Young with Losing Myself.
It's a queer UK singer.
Absolutely.
He came out of one of those shows, TV shows.
Yes, I think either Britain's Got Talent or The Voice or X Factor.
One of them.
Our
guest tonight is human rights campaigner Peter Tatchell. I was really interested as he was speaking, talking about the program they're trying to bring in the UK, which is kind of similar to our Safe Schools program, but even more broad by the sounds of it, and actually thinking that we should be talking about the benefits and pleasure of sex. If I think back to our sex education lessons, I tell you, that was furthest from anything.
I think it's really important. I mean, Peter always has a clarity about what he's trying to achieve, and he wants this to be in every school, whether this is a privately funded school. There's fewer privately funded schools as a proportion in the UK, and the public schools as well. And he wants those messages to go across the board, and it's not just about LGBTI issues. You know, again, he says this time and time again. He sees this as a rights issue. It's about well-being for students.
I wonder what our listeners think. Perhaps send us a message, 0427 Joy 949. Maybe you can even share with us your memories of sex education at schools. And it's not sounding like what Peter's talking about. So Peter Tatchell is our guest. And Northern Ireland is now the only part of the UK without marriage equality. And that means they are a target for Peter Tatchell.
Watch out.
We asked him, what is the chance of achieving marriage equality in Northern Ireland soon?
For some years, there's been a majority in Northern Ireland in favour of marriage equality. Mm-hmm. The level of support currently ranks at over 70%. Mm-hmm. There have also been 4 votes in the Northern Ireland Assembly before it was suspended in favour of marriage equality. But the Democratic Unionist Party, the dominant party in Northern Ireland, has used a device under the Good Friday Peace Agreement called a petition of concern to veto the decision of the Assembly. Now, under this petition of concern, it was meant to ensure that no legislation was passed which would disadvantage either the Republican or the Loyalist communities. It was never intended to be extended to cover equality issues, but that is what the DUP has done. Even though a majority of the Loyalist population and even a majority of DUP supporters now favour marriage equality, the issue is with Arlene Forster, the leader of the DUP, and her key advisers. They are the roadblock. And right now, essentially, Northern Ireland is under direct rule from Westminster because the Assembly has been suspended. So we're saying that Theresa May and the government of Westminster should legislate marriage equality because they are the de facto effective government of Northern Ireland, and it is unconscionable for a part of the United Kingdom to be allowed to violate the human rights of LGBTI plus people and for Northern Ireland to be separate and in contradiction to the rest of the UK where marriage equality prevails. But of course, Theresa May is refusing to legislate because she relies on the support of DUP MPs to sustain her government in office.
For the moment. So am I inferring that when it comes to the next government in the UK, and we shouldn't assume what type of government that would be, especially if we look at what just happened in Australia, but if that government wasn't reliant upon the Democratic Unionists, do you think that that next government should be able to pass marriage equality for Northern Ireland?
Yes. Either to restore the Assembly and to modify or restrict the use of the petition of concern, or legislate directly. Mm. But there's no guarantee there'll be a different government.
I have to ask the question. Peter Tatchell, are you or have you ever been a communist?
No, but I think the social justice values of the socialist communist tradition are things that the LGBT movement can learn from and embrace. So again, communism or socialism is about social transformation, and that's the way I see LGBT plus rights as well. I think it's really important that we innovate, not assimilate. that we set out the parameters of a new sexual democracy, a new utopia that can liberate all people from all forms of oppression, and that we as LGBT plus people stand in solidarity with others who are victimized, and that they stand in solidarity with us. Because obviously, united, we are stronger. Together, we can be more effective. So in my work on LGBT plus issues over the years, I've tended not to go for LGBT plus exclusive campaigns. So on relationship and sex education, which we talked about, I very much argued that it's about better relationship and sex education for all young kids, whatever their sexuality, whatever their gender identity. And this creates a common interest between straights and non-straights in working together. You know, collectively we are stronger. Likewise, on issues like the age of consent, you know, I've argued that although the unequal age of consent in the UK and other countries was wrong, we have to question whether 18 or 16 is the appropriate age for lawful consent. We know that most young people, certainly in Britain, they have their first sexual experience at the age of 13 or 14, not 16, the lawful age of consent. And why should those young people be effectively criminalised by the law? We should end the criminalisation of those young people, providing there's no more than a few years difference in their ages. So it's about reframing all these issues in a way that goes beyond the LGBT plus agenda to embrace everyone, to ensure that society is fair for people of all sexualities and gender identities.
Joy 94.9.
Well, I suppose direct action, you know, peaceful, non-violent direct action and civil disobedience, that is ethical law breaking, is necessary in an era when people in power won't listen and when we haven't got a place at the table. And so back in those bad old days, direct action was the only way to go, because in Britain, Parliament wouldn't debate LGBT rights. You know, support for LGBT plus equality was almost zero. The government wouldn't listen, the police wouldn't listen, the judges wouldn't listen, the media wouldn't listen, religious leaders wouldn't listen, so we had to take direct action. I think it still has a role to play in certain instances. So, for example, I believe in ethical outing, where public figures abuse their power and influence to vote against gay equality or to, in other ways, harm LGBTI people. I think that it's right to expose them as both homophobes and hypocrites. You know, for me, outing of those people is queer to self-defense. We're defending ourselves against people who are causing us harm. And I think that should be used en masse against legislators and church leaders who do, you know, abuse their power to harm us. Of course, the big problem always is to get the evidence, the certain evidence that these people are gay. Rather, we can't rely on gossip and innuendo. You've got to get people who actually know them personally and are prepared to testify. But I would still use outing today if I had the evidence.
That's human rights campaigner Peter Tatchell from the UK on his recent visit to Melbourne. Ethical outing, there's a new term.
I think it's a very old term, actually, Matt, but it's an issue that comes up time and time again. Peter brought that up himself.
If somebody is voting against LGBTI issues, but they are LGBTI, it's calling them out. Is that right?
Yeah, it's saying you're a hypocrite. And Peter's quite clear that he thinks that this is ethical in some circumstances. He thinks that it's also
quite... Who decides what circumstances?
Yeah. Well...
I'm struggling to you know, with the ethical part of it, because can it ever be ethical when you're doing something against somebody's will?
Well, he's actually saying that they're hypocrites, so...
I understand, but it's... I don't know. It just seems a little bit... there's many reasons why people might want to keep something like this. But yes, if it's harming the public, if they're in a position of power, I don't know that you can argue that it's ethical. Mm. I don't know.
It sounds good, though. I've just ethically outed you.
it does.
I think there's a few politicians in the Australian Parliament that need some ethical outing, maybe. I wonder what our listeners think about that. Ethical outing? Should we be outing people full stop? Is it ethical at all?
Yeah, what Peter brings up is just, you know, how radical and what does it mean to be radical? What does it mean to take direct action in 2019? And, you know, Peter Tatchell was the guy who in the 80s tried to arrest Robert Mugabe on human rights issues in Belgium, and the bodyguard sat on top of him. He was arrested only last year in Russia and protesting against Putin. He's never been afraid to go out there and put his own skin on the line.
He's made a trademark of it, really.
Yes.
It doesn't always work. I mean, it's the anniversary of Tiananmen Square this week, and that civil disobedience didn't work. So I guess it's picking your battles, perhaps.
I think he's more circumspect about when direct action is appropriate and when it's not. But he certainly sees that there is a role for that. But he also sees that there's a role for social media, for campaigns. And I think we'll feature some more of an interview with him talking about asylum seekers at a later date. And much of that work he does is, you know, writing letters to the immigration minister in the UK. And he would say that almost all of that is successful. So it's using appropriate tools for appropriate circumstances.
We've got so much to learn. And we're going to learn a bit more about Peter himself. Peter the person, Peter the Melburnian, coming up on World Wide Wave.
Hi, this is Janne, Mr. Gay Finland, and you are listening on the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Freezes just like ice, and there's a cold and lonely light that shines from you. You wind up like the wreck you hide behind that mask you use. And did you think this fool could never win? Well, look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of love in a simple way, and if you need to know while I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. I'm still standing after all this time, picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. I'm still standing. I'm still standing. Once I never could hope to win, you're stopping down the road and leaving me again. Threats you made were meant to cut me down. And if my love was just a circus, you'd be a clown by now. No, I'm still standing better than I ever did. Looking like a true survivor, feeling like a little kid. I'm still standing after all this time, picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. I'm still standing. I'm still standing.
That was Elton John.
Of course it was.
Of course
you almost don't need to announce this one.
I'm still standing.
And that's a tribute to Peter Tatchell, our guest tonight, who is
still standing after all these years.
Really love to hear your messages, 0427 Joy949 or on air at joy.org.au. And your sex education experiences at school, were they as bad as mine? The big auditorium with some person up the front with slides and the old overhead projector?
Do you know, in France we had absolutely nothing.
Really?
Absolutely nothing.
I thought France was the ultra-liberal.
Well, not when I was in school.
1800s? No.
thanks, Matt. Nothing at all. Nothing that I can remember.
Mm-hmm. So maybe you blocked it out.
Possibly. I don't think so. I would have liked to block out a lot of other things. But, yes, no.
We're talking all things the UK and human rights campaigner Peter Tatchell.
Now, although Peter is known as a UK activist, he was actually from Melbourne. He was brought up as a Pentecostal Christian, and speaking to him, that really has driven some of his attitudes and approach to life. He was the head boy at Mount Waverley Secondary College, and he didn't immediately realise that he was gay, not until actually he started to work in Maya, of all places.
Although everybody else seemed to pick up on that.
Everyone else seemed to pick on it a bit earlier, and he talks about that experience in this upcoming clip and how he was treated at school. And so we asked Peter on his most recent visit, his first visit in 10 years, in fact, to Melbourne, what it was... What it was like to be a British LGBTI campaigner who came from Australia.
You were born in Melbourne. You were raised as a Christian.
Not just a Christian, but a fire and brimstone evangelical Pentecostal Christian.
How's that background shaped Peter Tatchell in 2018?
Well, of course, I'm no longer religious. I gave that up when I was about 20, although I began to be sceptical and questioning about the age of 13 or 14. On the upside, because I always try to look for the silver lining... my parents always taught me that, and my church taught me that you have a personal responsibility for your actions, and that you should never go along with the crowd. You should stand up for what is right and true and honest. And of course, they meant that in religious terms, but I interpreted it more broadly and widely. So, inadvertently, it made me quite a questioning, sceptical person, including, ironically, about my own faith. In 1969, I realised I was gay. And amazingly, given my profoundly strict fundamentalist Christian upbringing, I very quickly... I didn't have any anxiety or guilt at all. I mean, I thought I might be gay... Well, going back a bit further, at school, I thought I was straight. And I dated girls, but I didn't have sex with them because that was against the Christian religion. But I thought I was straight. Right. But lots of other boys at school thought I was gay. And they would call me Pufta Pete and Pansy Pete. But not in a vicious way. It was just like a jocular way. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, probably not acceptable. But I wasn't really offended by it.
That's what happened in those days. Yeah. That was it. That was the norm.
In the summer, of course, you know, boys used to wear shorts and long white socks. And the other boys in the school always used to boast that I had the best legs in the school. And I used to get wolf whistled. But it was interesting that sort of, you know, it was homophobic, but people weren't, the people who said that weren't my enemies. They were my best friends, you know. And it was not meant in a nasty or vindictive way. It was only after I left school and went to work in the design display department at Maya in Bourke Street that I ever met any gay people. And they're all about my own age, completely disabused me of the stereotype of a gay man being a dirty old man who molested young boys. That was the only sort of image I'd ever heard, because you'd see it in the Truth newspaper or the Herald or the Sun, you know, a 56-year-old man arrested for molesting a young boy on a train or something like that. So that's what I thought a homosexual was. And then I met all these guys at work who were gay and about my own age, nice people, creative people. So I suppose in that circle, I was able to... First of all, I you know, ditched those stereotype views, because quite clearly these weren't the stereotypes at all. And I thought to myself, well, these homosexuals, they're very nice guys. What's the problem? Live and let live. But I still, because of my religious upbringing, had a, you know, I thought homosexuality was wrong. But over time, I began to think to myself, well, yeah, I dated these girls. I didn't have sex because it was against the Christian religion. But was I ever sexually aroused by them? Not really. I began to think, well, you know, I wonder. And so over a period of time, I began to sort of think, I wonder if I'm gay. And I thought, well, the only way to test it out is to try it. And one of the seniors at work, senior, I was 17, he was 21, which I thought was a huge age gap, kept on inviting me out for dinner. I knew what dinner meant. I always say no. And it became a standard joke. Every night after work, he'd invite me home for dinner. This went on for about 3 or 4 months, and then one day I suddenly thought, oh, fuck it, you know. Okay. So I went home, and I remember he lived on Beaconsfield Parade in Middle Park, right on the beach, on the first floor, overlooking the beach. We had dinner at a table by the window, looking out of this beautiful, you know, summery evening. I think porpoises or dolphins in the bay. It was so romantic. And then after dinner, we watched a British sitcom, George and the Dragon. And then he said, would you like to go to bed? And I thought, well, it's now or never. I'll try it. So we had sex. And I remember lying back on the bed afterwards, thinking to myself, if this is what gay is, I am definitely gay. And to me, it seemed so totally natural. I was so sexually and emotionally fulfilled. I remember my boyfriend, well, he became my boyfriend for the next 3 years. That same night, he said, are you sure you've never had sex with a guy before? Because I seemed to know what to do. But what I was doing was copied what I'd seen men and women doing in movies. So we were together for 3 years, and we're still lifelong best friends. But from that moment onwards, I never had a moment of doubt. I said, the Bible is clearly wrong. You know, the sins in the Bible, the sins the Bible condemns, are sins that, or behaviors that cause harm to others. Okay. We weren't causing harm to anyone. In fact, this was a great emotional and sexual fulfillment. And how can, you know, we fell in love. How could love ever possibly be wrong?
Talking to Peter Tatchell.
It is so, he's just so open.
I think he might have told some of that before, but when we sat down and we spoke about being on Joy, and I said to him, you know, this is a space where you can talk about anything you want to, Peter, and he was just wonderful to talk to. He really was.
Up until he said that that they're lifelong friends, I'm picturing some guy in Middle Park going, oh, my God, I remember him.
No, I think he's got permission.
He had
I think
the
he's
best
got permission.
Legs.
Yeah, I understand a lot more about Peter Tatchell having chatted to him, and I hope listeners do too. And you can see what drove him, you know, and how that was a moment that really he lost his religion really from that point onwards, didn't he?
Yeah. But he did losing my religion tonight.
Yeah.
Interesting that religious upbringing though, and what his image of being gay was, and I guess that's for so many young people. It's just driven by, you know, what you're taught at school, and then you're exposed to the human element, real people, and you go, oh, hang on, that's not what I've been taught. You know, that journey of coming out for so many people is changes when it moves from what you read in the paper or see on TV to, you know, meeting a real person and going, oh, actually, you're just a normal person.
Yeah.
So many impressive things that he's done. We've actually got, great job, we've got a lot more from Peter that we're going to bring you in coming weeks in different packages. But we just thought that the work that the Peter Tatchell Foundation is doing in the area of sex education and sex positivity in the UK was something worth bringing, particularly in the light of our current discussions around religious freedoms and some people within the community who are trying to wind back, I feel, trying to wind back some of the privileges, the rights in the name of religion.
Yeah, it's about building that alliance.
We might have to find some people to ethically out.
Whatever it takes.
On that one.
Whatever it takes.
We've got Worldwide Rap coming up for you on Worldwide Wave.
This is Otan Batar from LGBT Center of Mongolia, and I'm happy to be on Worldwide Wave.
Jimmy Somerville, another great UK artist, Bronxky Beat. And
Scottish, if you don't mind. Yeah, it may not be British for much longer.
Scottish is part of the UK. Scotland is part of the UK.
Until the next referendum, yes.
And very out. Mm-hmm. Very out in the open. We're featuring all things UK tonight in honour of our guest, Peter Tatchell. And a big thank you to our guest tonight, Peter Tatchell. You can find out more about the great work that he does and his foundation at petertatchellfoundation.org.
And he'd love you to make a donation. The project that he's working on, he's never been paid for any of his advocacy work until he started up this campaign, the foundation. So they're doing great work. Get out there and support them.
To all of the people on Facebook, Rachel, Phil, Ziggy, everybody that's liked and interacted with us in the past week, W3Joy, our podcaster Alex and social media master Dean.
And coming up, stay tuned for Geeks Out with Miranda, Clayton and Co. And this is really where our geek world collides. Gadget, tech, sci-fi, horror, comics, everything
all
else.
All that young people
that
stuff.
You can, yes.
Look, a bit of music to take you out tonight.
Years and Years, Desire.
Catch you next week on Worldwide Wave.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from Worldwide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. Worldwide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.